out of the anti-white system and tune in to the pro-white system at radioarian.com.
Hello and welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Monday, September the 17th, 2018, and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, broadcasting at radioarian.com. Well, hopefully by now you will be able to see the last year's worth of Truth Without Radio, Grandpa Lampshade's Thoughts of the Day, and also Arian Britannia. That's been put back up there. What else have the Orthodox Nationalists? That's all been put back up there for the last year. I think it will take me a couple of weeks to replace all the files that archive.org got rid of, but it's actually proving to be a little bit quicker than I thought it was going to be. And it's also given me a chance to replace some of the other broken links in these articles. So really, I guess they did us a favour, really, by getting rid of us. They exposed themselves for being the hypocrites that they are, and they encouraged us to clean up the website and clean up the broken links and sort out our own archive. Well, that's the in-house stuff out of the way. I've got a couple of news stories for us today that I'd like to get into. And this first one actually comes from Britain. Islamic militants hijacked a prison chaplain's Bible classes and physically assaulted and abused him because of his Christian faith. And this is going on in a British prison. Pastor Paul Song today describes how he was left in a state of near constant fear after Muslim gangs acting with impunity came to dominate Brixton Prison in South London. He tells the Mail on Sunday of one chilling incident when a small group stormed his gathering in the prison chapel and began loudly praising the jihadis who hacked soldier Lee Rigby to death in the street. Now, this pastor, he's not actually white. He's Chinese. I don't think Chinese people can actually be Christian. I think Christianity is specifically for white people. But he still shouldn't be allowed to be attacked in a British prison by Muslims. Muslims that are singing and cheering about the very people that hacked Lee Rigby's head off in the street. It was obscene, the pastor said. Mr. Song describes how a hardline element grew increasingly powerful, threatening vulnerable inmates and telling them to convert to Islam for their own protection. See, this is how people are converting to Islam in the prisons. It's prison gangs that are doing it. Prison gangs. And the people are converting just to save their own skins for their own protection. And then when the nationalists get put in prison, of course, the Muslims are against the nationalists. And because they run the prison gangs, they are then telling the prison gangs, the people in the prison that have converted to Islam, to go after the nationalists. And our own people are no longer being protected in our prisons, and the Muslims are running them. And this prison here in Brixton, Muslims are running that prison. They were able to do this with complete impunity, invade his chapel where he was having his Bible meeting and just take it over. And this was just allowed to happen. And in actual fact, it was the pastor himself that was accused of being an extremist. My colleagues couldn't take any more, he said. My classes were often disrupted, so this happened more than once. At times, inmates openly spoke in the chapel in support of the Islamic State and suicide bombers, and there was nothing I could do about it. They spoke with such hatred of Britain that it was frightening. On another occasion, Mr. Song, who was born in South Korea, says he was racially abused, jeered at, and hit on the back. So don't forget, these are the supposed victims of racism, brown people. that are actually doing this, that are accused of being racist to him. And to say that these prisoners can be in support of Islamic State and at the same time they are allowed to read their Qurans in this prison, they've got an imam there, they're allowed to go to their mosque once a week, and here they are supporting Islamic State. And we've been told that in these prisons, it's all moderate Muslims, and the imams are there to teach a moderate version of Islam. Well, it's obviously not working, is it? If Muslims in this particular prison are able to invade the chapel and they're chanting in support of Islamic State, there was a judge just the other week pointed out to a terrorist that was being sent to prison for 20 years that he would have plenty of time to study the Quran while he was in there. Well, these Muslims here that invaded this chapel, they've been studying the Quran. There should be no Qurans in prison. It's the Quran that encourages terrorism. It's taking the Quran literally, which every Muslim is supposed to do, which tells them that they should be killing the non-believers and attacking the non-believers. And the nationalists that are in prison that we are being told are terrorists. There's nothing in Mein Kampf that says that the non-nationalists should be killed. There's not even any wording in Mein Kampf that isn't actually exact about what it's actually saying. That there's nothing there that is ambivalent. And yet nationalists, they're not allowed to read books like Mein Kampf in prison. In fact, the books that they are allowed to get have to be checked that there's no racial language in them. But the Qurans, you know, these Muslims, they're absolutely fine to have the Quran and Islamic literature sent in there to them so that they can convert other prisoners to Islam so that when they come out of the prison, they can then be used for terrorist activities. And don't forget, a lot of these jihadis that have been caught in Europe, they've been in and out of prison when they were young, and then they became Muslims and then they became fighters for Allah. I guess maybe some of them were thinking that they could pay for the sins that they carried out in their criminal lives by blowing themselves up and also at the same time by wanting to get themselves back on the white people that they see as responsible for putting them in prison in the first place. It left Mr. Song afraid of lingering anywhere in the prison that wasn't covered by CCTV. Now, this isn't a prisoner. This is somebody who has the same rank as an officer, as a prison officer in the prison, and he was too frightened to go anywhere that didn't have CCTV. Despite this menacing atmosphere, it was Mr. Song who ended up being accused of extremism. A Muslim imam took over as Brixton's head chaplain. How can you have a Muslim as a head chaplain? A chaplain is an office of the Anglican Church. It's an office of the Anglican Church, and they gave this role to a Muslim. The imam stopped the pastor running his mainstream evangelical courses because, he said, some of the material was too radical. Well, that's rich, isn't it? A Muslim saying that Christian material is too radical. Mr. Song's disturbing account of life inside Brixton Prison comes at a time of growing crisis in the prison service, which faces overcrowding and staff shortages. In the past 9 months, 4 jails have been described as failing, and on Friday, thousands of prison officers walked out for 6 hours in protest at unprecedented levels of violence. Justice Secretary David Gork conceded, "The level of violence is unacceptably high, and we are determined to bring it down." Well, how are they going to bring it down? How can you bring down an unacceptable level of violence when Negroes are 10 times more likely to be charged with violent acts, violent crimes? And the prisons are basically becoming more and more non-white, and the more non-whites you have in there, the more levels of violence there are going to be in there. The only way you can stop the violence in the prisons, or stop this unacceptable level of violence, is to remove the Negroes from them. Of course, that's what they're trying to do. They're trying to say that there are far too many blacks in prison, and the only reason they're there is because of racism. David Lammy wants prisons to account for why they have more than 10% Negroes in their prison, when Negroes only make up 10% of the population. The idea that they might actually commit more crimes than white people do just doesn't seem to have occurred to him. And that's what's at the root of this. That is what is at the root of these problems that they are having in prisons. And of course, you've also got people that have been put in there for thought crimes. You've now got a large portion of people that are actually in prison just for criticizing immigration or criticizing the government in rather colourful language. We've got people in there that are accused of being terrorists simply for putting stickers up saying that this is a white zone. Not this is exclusively a white zone, meaning nobody else can be here, but this is a white zone. That is enough to get somebody sent to jail for a year. That's the Britain that we're living in now. Mr. Song's time in Brixton came to an abrupt end in August last year when he was suddenly barred from the prison to which he had given 19 years of unstinting service. It was claimed that he had called an inmate a terrorist and behaved threateningly towards the imam, which he vehemently denied. So what's wrong with calling a terrorist in the prison a terrorist? What is wrong with a prison officer doing something like that? Prison officers should be able to call you whatever they like. I mean, these prisoners are given a number. How he can be suspended or kicked out of the prison for calling an inmate a terrorist, I don't know. And I doubt very much whether he actually did that. It doesn't seem likely to me that an evangelical preacher would behave like that. And this guy is having his church meetings invaded by Muslims chanting support for the killers of Lee Rigby. Now, 12 months on, and after initially being denied a fair hearing, he has been cleared and reinstated. It's quite amazing that the guy wanted to actually go back there after all of this. Mr. Song began to feel the pressure soon after Imam Muhammad Yusuf Ahmed was appointed as head chaplain in 2015. He said, "The imam's discriminatory agenda became clear from the outset when he began scrutinizing the material used in the Bible classes, claiming that it was too radical and that the Christian views expressed were extreme." Well, this is the Bible that this imam is talking about. That's the only material that he had was the Bible. This Muslim was scrutinizing the Bible and saying it's too extreme. "They are mainstream courses used by churches throughout the world," Mr. Song said. The imam said he wanted to change the Christian domination within the prison. Well, that's what it's all about. They want the place just to be Islam. They want Sharia law. They don't just want to change the prisons. They want to change the whole country so that it's under Islam. Mr. Song agreed to stop running his classes, though he continued to work with individual prisoners. The imam said I couldn't use the chapel, so I held a prayer meeting in a cell. But the imam got to hear about it and was furious. He is very big, physically intimidating, and he kept urging me to just leave. I thought about it, but I also thought, why should I give in? So the Muslims are terrorizing this guy to get him to leave the prison, and they've even forced him out of his own prison chapel. And nothing is said about this. It's the prison pastor himself that actually gets kicked out of the prison. One afternoon, three inmates appeared in the chapel, interrupting a discussion on divine grace to loudly acclaim the killers of Lee Rigby, whose murder by jihadists on a South London street shocked the nation. To the disbelief of Mr. Song and his fellow Christians, the interlopers insisted that hacking to death the 25-year-old soldier was justified, since in their eyes, it avenged the killing of Muslims by British troops. Don't forget, these Muslims are supposedly quote-unquote British. They're supposed to have loyalty to Britain, not to the Muslim Ummah, of course, which is an absolute nonsense. Muslims have loyalty to Muslims. They don't have loyalty to the British people. When Mr. Song calmly tried to argue back, he was shouted down, nor was it the only time his classes were to be similarly disrupted. "To do this in a place of worship was obscene," he says. "Some openly spoke in the chapel in support of Islamic State." Mr. Song said, "I was very upset by what these men said about Lee Rigby that day. They were making a commotion, saying the murder was justified. I tried to calmly reason with them, but was shouted down. And my courses were often disrupted in this way. Two or three would often come to my classes and rant about different things, like how the actions of suicide bombers were justified. There was nothing I could do. Some of the inmates spoke with such hatred about Britain, the government and the military, it was frightening." he said. This is a British prison. This is a British prison that is being run by Muslims, basically. Muslims are being allowed to run riot in Brixton Prison. Is there an investigation into that? No, there was an investigation into the pastor. Now, this is the reason why the prison officers are on strike and are protesting at the moment, because they don't have control of the prisons anymore. And the reason they don't have control of the prisons is because of the percentage of non-whites in there. Well, I've got another story here. This one actually comes from Germany. This one's quite funny. The BBC's reality check team has confirmed at least 447 killings and attempted killings by illegal migrants, asylum seekers and refugees in Germany in 2017. They were quite obviously were not expecting to find that actually these figures are correct. The publicly funded broadcaster's fact-checking team had taken issue with Alternative for Germany deputy leader Beatrix von Storck's claim that Germany had seen 447 killings and murders by illegal migrants in the last year. But their attempt to clarify the situation was less helpful than they might have intended. The German Interior Ministry says that, in fact, last year, 27 illegal migrants either committed or attempted to commit a murder or manslaughter, their article admonishes, but then goes on to say the 447 figure refers to killings or attempted killings by all asylum seekers and refugees, most of whom are in Germany legally. Oh, well, that's okay then. They're in Germany legally, so it doesn't matter that they've killed 447 people then. The difference between illegal and legal, this nonsense that once somebody has a piece of paper that says that they're German or British, they suddenly stop being an ethnic minority, they stop being a migrant. Whether they're legal or illegal, it doesn't matter. If those brown people had not been in Germany, then 447 people would still be alive. That's the point. That's the point of all of this. There are thousands, hundreds of thousands of white people that would not have been raped, would not have been killed, would not have been sold into sex slavery if our traitor governments hadn't imported these brown savages into our countries. Essentially, the fact checkers confirmed the AFD's figures, offering only a semantic objection to von Storck's decision to describe migrants who lodged asylum applications after arriving in Germany as illegal migrants. That's just typical of the BBC. They think they've got one over on you just by pointing out that whether somebody was legal or illegal or not. It's like when they triumphantly say that the Britain First tweets that Donald Trump sent out, they were unvalidated. They were unvalidated. Or the person in one of these tweets that was attacking a white man, he wasn't an illegal migrant, so that means that doesn't matter. Well, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if he's legal or illegal. The fact is, it was a brown person that was attacking a white person. The BBC team also boasts that overall crime in Germany has fallen to the lowest rate since 1992, but then has to concede that there has been an increase in migrant crime. So, yeah, white people aren't committing as many crimes as they were before, but non-white crime has gone through the roof. The broadcaster admits that violent crime rose from 180,000 cases to 193,000 between 2014 and 2016, and the number of murders increased by 14.6% and rapes by 8% over the same period. And you can make an educated guess that increase was all down to non-whites. They also concede that criminal suspects classified as asylum applicants or civil war refugees or illegal immigrants represented a total of 8.5% of all suspects in 2017, despite their population representing just 2% of Germany as a whole. So they're four times more likely to be arrested for serious crimes. And don't forget that they have brown privilege over there in Germany, so the police are not likely to go arresting them unless they've committed a serious crime. If it's something like shoplifting, the police have been told just to not do anything about it, because if they do, it will just increase the figures of non-whites arrested, And that will be ammunition for the far right. They certainly don't want to be helping the far right out in any way by arresting brown criminals. With respect to violent crime, this overrepresentation is even more pronounced, with migrants accounting for 10.4% of murder suspects and 11.9% of sexual offence suspects for the year. So they're six times more likely to be arrested for rape and five times more likely to be arrested for murder. These creatures are just a threat to us. They're just a threat to the German nation. What possible benefit could there be that warrants increasing your chances of being raped? Six times more likely to be raped. Five times more likely to be murdered. What possible thing can there be that actually makes that risk worth taking? Kebabs? Is it kebabs? Are the tasty kebabs worth so much that you don't mind increasing your risk of being raped by six times when you go into one of these restaurants to buy your kebabs? Ridiculous. The fact checkers then go on to hint that the blame for all of this should be attributed to the fact that asylum seekers in Germany face bureaucratic hurdles before they're allowed to find work. And while they receive some money from the state, it's limited. So it's Germany's fault, you see, that they are so much more likely to commit rape and murder. It's Germany's fault for not bending over backwards enough for these invaders, for actually insisting that they have to actually have documents to say who they are before they can be allowed to be an asylum seeker. And it's Germany's fault for not handing them out more money as soon as they get there. That's why they commit all these rapes, because they don't get enough dole money that they're not even entitled to anyway, because it's not their country that they've put the money into. They also conclude their article by quoting a series of excuses for migrant overrepresentation in the crime statistics by left-leaning criminologist Dominik Kudlakek. They have social deprivation. They are alone. And they spend most of their time with other people suffering from these risk factors. Oh, poor them. The accommodation of the majority of asylum seekers is like refugee camps with little privacy, which again can add to the likelihood of committing crimes, he argues. Well, what about the most socially deprived white areas? Let's look at some of the socially deprived white areas in the world. Let's look at Appalachia in America, which has a very low crime rate, but has the most social deprivation anywhere for white people. Compare that to the black ghetto and the crimes that go on in the black ghetto. It's because of race. That's what causes them to behave like this. And also, we've got the very worst people that come over from these countries. It's not the best. It's not the doctors and the lawyers. It's the criminals that are fleeing from the police anyway in the countries that they have come from. That's the people that come to our countries. That's the asylum seekers. They're criminals that are running from the law in their own country. He also suggests that their overrepresentation is because of the demographics, as they are younger than the average population and mostly male. Young men commit more crimes in every society. Yes, and black males commit 10 times as many crimes as white males, young white males. It's not just that they are young people, it's the colour that they are, it's the race that they are. It's embedded in every cell of their body that they are more likely to commit violent crime. And of course, this appears to contradict the BBC's typical portrait of migrants as either valuable doctors and engineers or vulnerable women and children fleeing danger. So at least they've been honest enough to admit that they are mostly male. Well, we have got some good news today as well, and of course it comes from Italy. Italy's Matteo Salvini infuriated the European Union's most senior foreign minister by declaring that Italy needs more children of its own, not more Africans, to replace the children that we are not having. Speaking up about white genocide there, well done, Mr. Salvini. Speaking at a conference on the European migrant crisis in Vienna, the dynamic Lega leader, who became Italy's deputy prime minister and minister of the interior after anti-establishment populists triumphed at the polls in the recent elections, said that he disagreed with EU politicians who say that we need immigration because the population of Europe is getting older. I have a completely different viewpoint, he said. I believe that I am in government in order to see that our young people have the number of children that they used to a few years ago, and not to transplant the best of Africa's youth to Europe. Well, he's still being politically correct there, isn't he? It's not the best of Africa's youth that is coming to Europe. It's the worst of Africa's youth. It's the illiterate, rapist black youth that is coming to Europe. If they actually had any education, they'd be staying in their own countries because they'd be able to make enough money to get by in their own land. They don't have an education and they don't have any chance of having an education. They have an average IQ of 75. They would be borderline retarded if it was white people with that same IQ. Salvini's remarks flustered nearby Jean Asselborn, who muttered blah, blah, blah while the Italian was speaking. The 69-year-old Luxemburger, who is the EU's longest-serving foreign minister, having been in post since 2004, has previously complained that anti-mass migration parties which want to, quote-unquote, protect Christianity and refuse to, quote-unquote, open the door to Arabic-speaking Muslim migrants will destroy Europe with their strong border policies. Because, of course, it's absolutely terrible to have a political party that wants to protect Christianity. What possible European would want to support a party that wanted to protect Christianity and not open the door to Muslims? It's this 69-year-old Luxemburger that is the traitor, not Salvini. Salvini merely used the opportunity to goad the EU loyalist, however, adding, maybe in Luxembourg they need to do this, but in Italy we need to help people have more children, rather than bring in modern-day slaves from Africa to replace the children that we are not having. And imposing conditions on a people that is designed to stop them from having children and designed to make the area that they are living in unlivable is genocide. That is the very description of genocide. Importing in a foreign population to replace the population that is already there, that is genocide. That is what is going on. And Salvini is doing his best to stand up against it. And we've also got more good news from Italy, and that's to do with the Five Star Movement. Now, the Five Star Movement are the leftist portion of the coalition that also has Lega in it with Salvini. And I find this really quite inspiring that left and right are working together in Italy, and they really do seem to be getting the best out of each side, particularly as far as the media is concerned. The Italian anti-establishment five-star movement have set their sights on the mainstream media, proposing to cut public funding to various outlets and create a new Netflix-like subscription service to give Italians access to all newspapers. The proposal is being championed by Five Star Movement politician Vito Crimi, who specifically targeted former Italian Prime Minister and media baron Silvio Berlusconi, leader of the Forza Italia party, declaring that for Silvio Berlusconi, the easy ride is over. We are not against the newspapers, Crimi said, adding we only want to remove public funds for publishing, not to eliminate the fund for pluralism. Italian Minister of Economic Development and M5S leader Luigi Di Maio also attacked the mainstream media this week, saying he gets all of his news online through social media, and adding that comments on his Facebook and Instagram pages are worth much, much more than all the editorials of the day. To inform myself, I do not read Italian newspapers. They only propagandize. I read specialized articles, foreign newspapers, bloggers, dossiers to inform myself about the problems related to my activity as a minister, Di Maio said. Once, the newspapers were a cross-section of public opinion. They had a bit of the popular feeling that was breathed in the streets and the bars, but this component has been lost, and it is for this reason that they lose sales, he added. Trust in the mainstream media and the system in general has declined in Italy in recent years, with polling data from this year revealing that only 45% trusted the mainstream media. The figures have been similar in other countries, like Sweden, where a survey in 2016 found that up to half of respondents avoided mainstream media entirely and got their news from alternative news outlets online. Sweden's leftist government has taken the opposite approach to the five-star movement, however, having created a multi-million krona fund to give to mainstream outlets to fight fake news. So the Italian leftists, they are fighting fake news. They are going to take away the funding from the mainstream media, whereas Sweden's government is actually giving funding to the mainstream media. So it does seem to me that in Italy, they are getting the best from the left and they are getting the best from the right. They are fighting fake news, which they know comes from the mainstream media in Italy. And at the same time, they've also got Salvini on the right, who is protecting Italy from invasion. And of course, nationalism should have an element of socialism in there. And if you are going to be standing up for your nation, it doesn't mean you're just standing up for the intelligent ones or the rich ones. It means that you are standing up for everyone in your nation. Every part of your ethnicity is important to you. Some may be more important than others, but we do need to have every part of the ethnicity intact to function as an organism. We need the farmers, we need the doctors, we need the intellectuals, we need the labourers, we need every part of society. Every class is important to have a functioning society, and it's only when you have monocultural ethnic society that it functions, that it functions well, how a nation should be. And that's the only time that you'll actually have unique features to that nation. I mean, just take North Korea, for example. Look at how unique North Korea are. And that is because they are monocultural, because they're 99.9% North Korean. That's why they have that individual flavour. And if you look at the European nations from 50 years ago, they were all absolutely unique and had a unique flavour. And now that they are multicultural, it's all exactly the same everywhere. It's McDonald's everywhere. So if we want to get back to how we should be, we have to become homogenous again. And it means national socialism. It means you have the nationalist side of the politics, and it means you have the socialist side of the politics. And that is what we appear to be seeing happening in Italy, which is a really good thing to see. It's very, very, very inspiring. Anyway, that brings us to the end of the podcast today. Thank you very much for listening. I will be back tomorrow with more of the Daily Nationalist for you. God bless and hail victory.